This is an ABC podcast.
All right, this is going to be good, isn't it?
So I thought I really have to hook the reader at the beginning to give them something to care about.
The most beautiful pages that I've ever read.
But I read that at least once a year.
And the whole novel is a song.
It is phenomenal.
I just had to go back over and over to suck the marrow out of these stories.
And I think she is the most extraordinary writer.
And I love her books. I think they're brilliant.
The descriptions are sublime.
And as a reader, I want that. I want it all.
Hello and welcome to another podcast extra edition of The Bookshelf here on ABC Radio National, on the ABC Listen app, and on your literary podcast catcher of choice. Thanks for following us and for expanding your reading list every week. I'm Kate Evans, and today's guest is a writer who likes to read her way into wherever she lives. She's in Edinburgh at the moment, so she's using fiction as well as history to understand the place. Her name is Fiona Moseley, and she's an English writer whose first novel, Elmet, was set in rural Yorkshire, full of its mythologies and a strong sense of place, using a really small cast of characters. Her latest, Hot Stew, takes us into London's Soho, which has such a rich history, and since reading it, a lot of other literary versions of Soho have made more sense to me. You might have heard a review discussion I had about it a few weeks ago with the writer Patrick Carey on the broadcast edition of this show. So we'll start this conversation with Fiona Moseley about this latest novel of hers before moving on to her other reading and the books she recommends. Fiona Moseley, thank you for speaking to us on The Bookshelf.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
Congratulations on Hot Stew, a novel set in London, Soho. Now, you give us hundreds of years of eclectic history in the first few pages. So tell us, what's so interesting about this one small, specific part of the city?
Well, I'm really interested in the way that cities can change and the way that a specific piece of land can go from being a field to a vibrant heart of one of the major cities in the world a few centuries later. And that's what I try to do with the opening. So it wasn't so long ago in the grand scheme of history that Soho was just a collection of fields north of the old city of London. And it was a place where people from the city could graze their animals and people dried their laundry out there. And then, of course, buildings started to be thrown up and people lived there in houses. And then it gradually became a kind of a sort of party district for the well-to-do of the cities. They could escape the formalities of the cities and go and live in Soho or go and spend time in Soho. And gradually over time, yeah, it changed again. In the 19th century, it was the place where a lot of immigrants went to. Most famous of them was probably Karl Marx, while he was doing a lot of his writing at the British Library. And yes, then later in the 20th century, became a place where a lot of people from Italy resided. So it became full of Italian restaurants and it became a food centre. And it also, for a long, long time, has been the sort of scene of the London sex industry.
Well, given that, what is or was a stew?
Okay, so a stew isn't something that really, it's not really a word that is used anymore, but in Shakespeare's day, a stew was a name for a brothel. So when he was around, they were really south of the river in Southwark, not so much in Soho, but I wanted to use that word just because I am pretty interested in history and the historical context of cities and these sites. And I wanted to just give a sense of that, the long passage of time. And also, stew is such a lovely pun, isn't it?
Yes.
Not a pun, but there are many different meanings because, yes, a stew was a brothel, but it also creates the sense of a melting pot or a place where something is just about to bubble over.
Although
you know, although you're writing about this whole area of Soho, there's a sense in which you've located it around a couple of very specific buildings, including one where there are sex workers and little flats upstairs. There's a restaurant at the ground floor. There is a really interesting set of basements underneath. But deep down below it, there's a rumbling. Is it the vibrations of history?
That's a good point. I hadn't even thought of that. But yes, it could well be. So the rumbling, I suppose, in a more literal sense in the novel, is coming from the building of Crossrail. So that's something that has been going on under the streets of London for well over a decade now. It's an additional tube line that's going to connect east and west. And so in a literal sense, the rumbling comes from the building work. But yes, there are also many, many figurative rumblings. There is a sense that the city is slowly consuming itself, slowly falling in on itself, that it can't kind of support the weight of its past, the weight of its present, expectations for the future. And that all comes to a head in this novel.
And this isn't an abstract novel. I mean, you're telling the stories of a set of characters who live and breathe and fight. So whose stories did you want to tell?
I wanted to tell everyone's stories, I suppose. The thing which really interests me, the way that characters are connected. You know, at first glance, it may not seem like the interests of a group of people squatting in a Soho basement align at all with the interests of some recent Cambridge graduates who are struggling to make a place for themselves in the world. And of course, their experiences are hugely, hugely different. You know, there's no need to flatten those experiences. But I'm interested in exploring the ways that they can be seen to align or be connected within these grander urban socioeconomic structures. So I wanted it really to be a book about many, many different characters whose lives collide as they do in these urban centres.
And we do meet quite a raft of characters whose lives all interconnect. But two who really do leap off the page are two women, Precious and Tabitha. Who, tell us about them.
They started as minor characters, or not minor characters, but I didn't realise when I started writing the novel that they would be the life and soul of the piece, as I think that they are. I agree that they are. So Precious is a sex worker, and she's in her 40s, and she has children, and she actually has a grandchild and another grandchild on the way. And Tabitha is kind of her partner, but also she works with her, she helps her, she ensures her safety. Tabitha's in her 60s now. And they live together and they get on with their lives and they get on with their work. And things start to become difficult for them when their landlady, Agatha Howard, who owns much of the Soho property, she wants to kick them out because she wants to build a raft of new luxury flats. So they're going about their business and then things become a little bit difficult for them in terms of their living situation. And they decide that they're not going to go quietly. So they group together with some of their friends and they start to fight back.
And gentrification and these sorts of changes, of course, happen in cities all the time. But is this drawn from anything in particular that was happening around you or that you saw?
Yeah, so I lived in Soho for 4 months in the summer of 2013. So I had a room there in an old Soho garret, which wouldn't have usually been affordable to me. But because of Crossrail, the building was having to be underpinned and it was actually in danger of falling down. And so a kind of not very scrupulous person decided that they'd rent it for a kind of a low rate to people like me who were stupid enough to take the bait. So I ended up living there for a few months. And yeah, I saw a lot of change when I was there. And later in that year, the end of 2013, there was a huge clear out of many of the old walk-ups, and so those are the brothels, and many of the old venues of the London sex industry. and there was a fight back. And you can, I mean, if your listeners are interested, they can actually read about that on the website of the English Collective of Prostitutes, because the women that were involved in the real events have recorded their own history, and it's a very interesting history. I took that as the spark of inspiration, and then I created a range of characters and a range of entirely made up events prompted by that very real struggle.
And how else did you access the history of the place in which this novel is embedded?
Well, in terms of the long history of Soho, I'm sort of a historian by training in a way. I did history at university, and I also did much of a PhD in medieval urban history. So it was kind of already part of my thinking, my ways of thinking. I'd looked at the changing face of London in 14th century and the way that the civic authorities used the excuse of, cleaning up the city to make huge changes, which really transformed the fabric of the place and pushed certain people out and drew other people in. So in terms of the long history, I was already reading around that. In terms of the more recent history, I read as much as I could, books by Juno Mack and Molly Smith, a book called Revolting Prostitutes, which is a lovely play on words, which is about sex workers fighting for their rights. I read a lot, and I had a lot of conversations.
I'm already loving the image of the bookshelves then that sit next to or behind this novel of yours. So if we imagine perhaps a fictional bookshelf on which you place Hot Stew, so you've got this novel of gangsters and butchers and hard men and working girls, out of work actors. So what other books would you place beside it?
I spent a lot of time thinking about Oliver Twist by Dickens, simply because I love the way in Dickens that the city is a major character, and the city comes to consume everyone in the end. I love the way that Dickens writes crowd scenes. I also think Nightwood by Juno Barnes, 1936 novel, would be on that bookshelf of pieces of work that inspired Hot Stew. Yeah, I also think Thackeray's Vanity Fair comes into play a little bit.
Tell us more about, I love Vanity Fair. Tell us more about why that
one. Yeah, I love Vanity Fair. I suppose Becky Sharp is a character who is in some respects pretty hard-nosed, hard-nailed, is that the phrase? Pretty robust, and she's not entirely likable, and I'm, not very interested in characters who are out and out sort of likable. But yes, she's somebody who manages to negotiate society and use the interests of her kind of her gender to really sort of project herself forward. And she plays on all the foibles of society to get her point across. And although that doesn't really happen in Hot Stew, I like the scenes that Thackeray sets up.
There are so many books too about the sort of the gangsters of London, which are sort of a simmering away in parts of this novel of yours.
Yes. I mean, one of the things about Hot Stew is that Agatha Howard, the character who owns a lot of the Soho property, she acquired it from her late father, who's a man she never met. He died before she was born. But he's an old Soho gangster. So he started from nothing and made his fortune after World War II when property was going cheap. He ran illegal nightclubs and he ran brothels and he made a fortune. Now, Agatha isn't from that world. She herself is entirely gentrified. She had a very expensive education. She moves in rarefied circles, and yet she's got her money from this seedy past, and she's trying to clean up the business. She's trying to clean up her money. So yeah, she's very much a product of the gangland past, and she's trying to escape that.
There are other characters though where it's not as obvious where they fit into those sort of stock characterizations. So you've got this literal underworld of vagrants who almost have a sort of king amongst them, an archbishop. Tell us about them.
So they live in the basement of this building. And yes, the Archbishop. So a lot of people in this novel have nicknames, or they have names which are not their original or true names, or perhaps they are in fact truer names. And the Archbishop's one of those. So he just leads this group of vagrants who, some of them are struggling with addiction, some of them are homeless, have no place to live, and he collects them together and acts as their king or their overlord. And they initially call him the vicar, and then gradually this changes. He becomes the bishop, and then he becomes the archbishop. And he's quite a surreal character. So he claims to have been around at the time of Casanova, and he claims to have sat for Joshua Reynolds, and he claims to have known all of these old Sohoites over the centuries. So we get an impression that he might be hundreds of years old, or that he's lying. And he collects together people who are known as Paul Daniels and Debbie McGee. Now, I don't know if they're known in Australia, but Paul Daniels was a famous magician, and Debbie McGee was his partner and assistant.
I had to look them up, I'll confess.
Oh, you did?
I realised it was referencing something, and I had to find out who they were.
Yeah, it may be one of those things slightly lost in translation. But so Paul Daniels in Hot Stew is a magician, and he goes around the streets of Soho performing magic tricks for tips, and his magic tricks often go wrong. And so people start to call him, although his real name is Kevin, people start to call him Paul Daniels. For that reason, people start to call the woman Cheryl, who goes around with him, they start to call her Debbie McGee. And they're trying to make a life for themselves. They're trying to make ends meet. Paul Daniels is a pretty horrible, grotty figure. And then Debbie McGee goes away, and she goes underground. And she has this strange expedition through the underworld, the underbelly of London. And she crawls through some of these tunnels. She finds herself in the tube network, and then she finds herself in an underground swimming pool in the basement of a huge mansion, and she sort of undergoes a lone rehab and emerges on the other side. But I suppose with that character, what I wanted to ask is, is the world that she emerges into better or worse than the one she left? And is the life that she emerges into better or worse than the one she left?
And I found her and the Archbishop fascinating. And it was partly, I guess, having read your earlier novel, Elmet, which is set elsewhere in the north of England, completely different. But I wondered if in both cases you were sort of interested in sort of folklore and old connections and almost a sort of genius loci spirit of place thing.
Yeah, I think definitely. I mean, as you've mentioned, my first novel, Elmet, couldn't be more different from Hot Stew in style and in tone. But I think a lot of the themes are the same. Elmet also centred around a dispute over a piece of land. And as you mentioned, there is a spirit of the place embodied in various characters in both Elmet and Hot Stew. So yes, I think the Archbishop and the character that is known as Debbie McGee both sort of embody that particular place and its history.
So, Fiona Moseley, we've been talking about your reading and your bookshelf, specifically in terms of your novel. But, of course, I'm talking to you, you're in Britain, you're still having to deal with the COVID lockdown. So what has this meant for your reading over the last year or so?
Yeah, Lockdown has obviously been a very difficult time for everyone, but I have been trying to do as much reading as possible, just to help me escape my the four walls of my flat here in Edinburgh. And I think that's the great thing about reading, you can really go anywhere. That said, I have also been very interested in reading Edinburgh novels. So I've been making my way through Muriel Spark. I reread The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie, and I was also reading The Ballad of Peckham Rye, which I think is a novel which has some connections to my novel Hot Stew in terms of the changing face of the city. I've also been reading a new novel by a debut author called Sarah Bernstein. So that's called The Coming Bad Days. And it's like a very interesting and close examination of a young woman sort of dealing with kind of surreal events around her and dealing with urban precarity and a precarious working and living situation.
Is that an Edinburgh one as well?
It is actually an Edinburgh book as well. Yes, I've been focusing on Edinburgh books.
So you really like to read your way into a place.
I absolutely do, and currently that's Edinburgh, but previously that has been London or Yorkshire or New York. Yes, I like to see how different authors tackle the same place differently, and I particularly like that if, you know, you have access to the literature of a place from a long period of time. You know, a novel about a certain city in the 18th century is quite fun to read alongside a novel set in the 21st century about the same location. So, yeah, I've been doing that.
Are there other Edinburgh novels that you want to recommend to us?
Yeah, so The Heart of Midlothian by Sir Walter Scott is a really interesting one. I mean, Sir Walter Scott, I really like him as a writer because his stories are very fun. I'm not actually sure if he's a very good writer, but he's a very fun writer. So The Heart of Midlothian opens with a political protest and opens with some riots. And I'm very interested in how certain authors write about crowds, and they write crowd scenes, because we often associate the novel with individuals and with an individualist sentiment, partly because novels are written by single authors rather than collectively, and partly because they often focus on the interiority of an individual. But that's a novel which a sort of a wide angle view of crowd scenes and group dynamics. So that's something that I've been reading.
What a fascinating point. I'm now going to be paying attention to crowds in fiction much more.
Yeah, they crop up again and again when you start to search for them. And I think, it's always interesting to see how particular authors approach them, because sometimes they jump from person to person and it's a collection of individuals, or sometimes they describe the crowd almost like a natural phenomenon. You know, at the end of Oliver Twist, the crowd that pursues Bill Sykes through the streets of through the slums of London, they're presented almost like a tidal wave, or, you know, a force coming up from the river. And then, you know, in Heart of Midlothian, it's much more an instance of jumping from particular headspace to particular headspace.
Well, I wonder what we're going to see in fiction when it comes to sort of anxious crowds set in 2020 and 21.
I do wonder, because in some respects we are a crowd of people who aren't able to currently meet. So we all think of ourselves as extremely isolated, but our experience is still very, very much connected. We're just in our own little boxes and bubbles. But yes, I wonder what novelists will do with that sense of collective experience when it comes to writing about COVID.
And what are you reading right now?
Right now I'm reading a book called A Spell in the Wild by Alice Tarbuck. So I've been dipping into this throughout the last year. It's a history of witchcraft, particularly in this country and also in Europe. And she discusses the history of that subject and also some of the sort of themes of magic and tarot reading and contemporary magic, I suppose. So, I'm enjoying that a lot. It's a non-fiction book.
I want to read the books that you're reading. Fiona Mosley, thank you so much for speaking to us on The Bookshelf.
Thank you.
Fiona Mosley's Hot Stew is published by John Murray. I'm Kate Evans, and this has been a podcast extra edition of The Bookshelf. You can keep this bookish conversation going by joining the ABC Book Club Facebook group, or by sharing the details of our podcast with your friends and asking them to follow along. And if you want more details of the books that came up in conversation today, we do list them online every week at abc.net.au/rn. That stands for Radio National. Find the Bookshelf page and you'll see this story. Join us again next time. Bye for now.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.